So suppose that we start with the Dirac Lagrangian. We know that it has a symmetry with respect to phase transformations. And then we can, so that this transformations are global in the sense that alpha is the same in all space-time points. So this is just a number, okay, the parameter of transformations. Now, suppose that we want to promote this transformations to this number to a function and to consider local transformation. So we want to take a global symmetry like that, and we want to make the Lagrangian invariant under transformations where alpha is a function of x. So we say that alpha now becomes a function of the space-time point. Now, the second term doesn't care about x dependence of alpha, right? So whatever alpha is, it will cancel in this term. So it is invariant. So m psi, psi bar psi is invariant. What is not invariant is the first term. The reason is that if you look how the derivative transforms, so d mu becomes d mu of e I alpha psi. So if alpha, when alpha was a global parameter, the derivative only acted on the on the psi, so so this transformed just by multiplication with a phase. But if alpha is a function of x, then the derivative will also act on alpha. Okay, so then there will be a second term, and if you substitute it here in the Lagrangian, the phase will cancel, but this term will not cancel. Okay, so this is the reason why the Lagrangian like that is not invariant under local phase transformations, is precisely because the derivative acts on alpha and it appears here, and so the Lagrangian does not transform to itself. So the idea is that how to fix this problem is that we can add a compensating field to the derivative such that the transformations of this compensating field will remove this extra term. Or, so this compensating fields are called gauge fields, more often, as a matter of fact. We may replace the ordinary partial derivative of psi by the long derivative or the covariant derivative. Which is defined as d mu plus plus the compensating field. So this derivative is called covariant derivative. Or sometimes it's also called the long derivative. Uh, And I guess you have studied covariant derivatives in the general relativity course, I suppose. So, indeed, this covariant derivative can also be given a geometric meaning related to parallel transport, but now this is not parallel transport of a vector, but rather it's parallel transport connected to transformations of psi in the space of its phase rotations. Anyway, so once we replace the derivative by covariant derivative and postulate that the gauge field transforms by gradient transformations minus 1 over E d mu alpha, then we can see that d mu psi will transform to, according to this formula, it will transform to d mu psi plus I d mu alpha psi. But then we need to transform also that term, so it will produce the same factor, but with a minus sign, right? It's minus I e 1 over e d mu alpha psi. So these terms cancel, and we see that the covariant derivative, unlike the ordinary derivative, transforms homogeneously. So it also, we can pull the phase through the covariant derivative because it contains the compensating field. So this Lagrangian is not invariant under local transformations, but if we replace in it the partial derivative by the covariant derivative, then this Lagrangian will be invariant. Okay? So this is invariant under under local phase transformations. Now, this compensating field is nothing but the electromagnetic field. So the origin of electromagnetic field from this point of view is to compensate phase transformations of the Dirac field. So if you also add the term that describes the dynamics of the electromagnetic field to this Lagrangian, we get the Lagrangian of QED. So this is the Lagrangian of QED written in manifestly invariant form. So if you decompose back the covariant derivative into ordinary derivative plus the term that contains A, then we get the same expression as before. Yes?
So we had an invariance under global phase transformations, but we didn't have local symmetry. Somehow I don't understand how that's possible. How can something be like globally invariant,
globally
not? Can you like explain?
So what means invariance? You just substitute the right hand sides for psi and psi bar, and see if the Lagrangian changes or not. So if this Lagrangian changes, because okay, basically what happens is that the derivative of psi shifts by d alpha, and so this d alpha term will be added to the Lagrangian. So Lagrangian is not invariant; it changes. Now this Lagrangian doesn't change at all, so it is invariant. We can substitute psi is a phase shifted by alpha, where alpha is an arbitrary function, and the Lagrangian will not change. If we postulate that A is transformed that way. So the role of A is to offset this gradient of the phase that appears here in the information.
So how is it globally invariant before?
Well, that's because psi is always multiplied by psi bar, and their phases rotate in opposite directions, so everything cancels. So the idea is that covariant derivative, so this was because, for instance, this term is invariant because psi and psi bar transform just to, so their phase rotates in opposite directions and cancels. However, in this term we also get this gradient, extra gradient. Now in the covariant derivative also transforms homogeneously, only acquires a phase under transformations, and these phases are compensated here because the psi bar transforms in the opposite, is the opposite case. Yes?
I think you need the I next to the D rather than outside bracket. It's not the same as the Lagrangian derivative to both.
Yes. So I think I should hear. Anyway, so this is the QD Lagrangian. Before we wrote it as the Dirac Lagrangian plus the Lagrangian for the electromagnetic field, and then plus the interaction term. So now what we have done here, we combined the interaction term with the kinetic term for fermions, such that they form the long derivative, and that makes the gradient, the gauge symmetry of this Lagrangian manifest. Yes?
We postulate that A mu transforms like that, right?
Yes.
Shouldn't we, like, if A mu is the electromagnetic Lagrangian, shouldn't we be able to, like, derive that?
Yes. So, I mean, my logic was that we want to start with the Dirac Lagrangian and demonstrate that electromagnetic field arises as a compensating field. So, indeed, so to make Dirac Lagrangian invariant, you need to add a field that transforms like that. And of course, we know that this is electromagnetic field because it has the same transformation. Yes?
So, why does this trick work?
Why does this trick work?
Yeah, why does it give us the consistent interacting quantum field theories?
It always works. You can make any global symmetry local symmetry by introducing compensating fields. So it should always work. Yes?
So in principle I could have cooked up something much more complicated that would have also compensated for this change.
Oh, really?
I think, yeah, you don't introduce one extra field, I can introduce 30 fields. Do something really complicated and get rid of that. So. There's a sense in which this is the minimal thing you could do.
Yeah, that can be true.
That's why people call this minimal coupling, I guess. It's coupling of
right. Yes, in principle, yes, you're right. One can add more stuff. But it's clear that if you add a linear term in A, that you go to the job. So this is
the simplest thing in the world.
This is the minimal thing you can do. Now, okay, now I want to ask a question. Yes, to you.
I mean, here in the notes it says that alpha describes the strength
the interactions.
Okay, this is different alpha. I'm sorry, I'm using notations. Not enough letters in the Greek alpha. So this alpha is just a function of, but it's a parameter of transformation. Now, okay, so we know that this Lagrangian or the Gordon of the Lagrangian has Lorentz symmetry. So what do you think happens if we gauge the Lorentz symmetry? We make Lorentz symmetry local. What is the compensating field? Sorry, Peter, can I? Yeah. So what is the interaction that arises from gauging the
gravity?
Yeah, it's gravity. One can think of gravity as a gauge field of Lorentz transformations. Okay, so this Lagrangian contains a coupling. In the covariant derivative, we have coupling E. And, yes?
That when you have, like I asked yesterday, when you have a magnetic field that acting on any charged particle, like in just regular mechanics, you have the Hamiltonian contains the covariant derivative instead of just P. It follows only through this indirectly.
Yeah, so yes, this is. Yes, if you have a Hamiltonian of particle, or charged particle, you can figure out how it couples to the magnetic field just by changing the derivatives. Hamiltonian shifting them, making them long derivatives. So this is an interacting field theory, and we cannot quantize it as before by expanding in oscillators. So in fact, no one knows how to compute the spectrum of QED exactly. And basically, what we will be doing in the next part of the course, we'll learn how to do computations by expanding in the electric charge. So we'll just do perturbation theory in E. First of all, what is the dimension of electric charge? Well, I would like to argue that E is dimensionless. How to see this? Well, if we look at the Coulomb potential, which is between two electrons. The Coulomb potential between two electrons will be equal to E squared over 4 pi r squared over 4 pi r. And so the potential has the dimension of energy. R is the dimension of length, but in our units, length and energy, the units of length and energy are inverse to one another. So basically, 1 over R has the same dimension as the left hand side. From which it follows that E squared is dimensionless. In fact, one often introduces alpha, so the measure of the interaction strength in
electrodynamics is the fine structure constant, which is defined as E squared divided by 4 pi. Now, in as I units, this would be E squared divided by 4 pi h bar c. But we set h bar and c to 1. The numerical value of the fine structure constant is something like 1 over 37. So approximately this is 1 over 37. And you see that this is a fairly small number. So interactions are indeed, in the quantum electrodynamics, are not very strong. So we can certainly use this as an expansion parameter. Characterizes the strength of interactions in QD. So our next task will be to understand how to do perturbation theory.
How can your fine structure constant actually show up in your equations anymore?
So E shows up here.
Okay. But I mean alpha itself.
Alpha itself is just a useful notation because one can argue that any physical quantity, a reasonable physical quantity, is even, how should I say, the expansion always goes in even powers of E. So it's the expansion of E squared. And so one can introduce some parameter proportional to E squared, so the factor of 4 pi appears for historic reasons. But for instance, E squared over 4 pi appears here, so the Coulomb potential is very natural to introduce alpha. Anyway, this is just a notation. I guess it was introduced in studying the fine structure of energy levels in the hydrogen atom, so the split between the generic levels, nearly the generic levels, which are characterized by this parameter. And so there, E squared appears in the combination with 4 pi, and people introduce this notation, Schrödinger notation. Does everyone see this level? Okay. So next we'll learn how to do perturbation theory for quantum fields. Well, usually, when we learn quantum mechanics, we don't start with perturbation theory. So typically, first we see the Schrödinger equation, and then we learn how to solve it for, for the square wave, for the harmonic potential, for some simple quantum mechanical problems, for hydrogen, for the hydrogen atom. And only afterwards, we learn how to do perturbation theory. Now, in quantum field theory, unfortunately, there are no simple models that are solvable exactly where we can take into account interactions exactly and explicitly. So non-perturbative field theory is a very complicated subject, so there's, in a sense, there's no harmonic oscillator quantum field theory. So most of the times, perturbation theory is the only generic technique that we can apply. So we can only have control of quantum field theory when the interactions are weak. So for that reason, we will start right away with understanding how to develop the expansion in the coupling system. Our main goal will be QED, where we would like to do expansion in E squared or in alpha,
which is E squared over 4 pi. But as an example, we will use also Klanghorn's theory modified by an interaction term. So we can consider adding to the Klanghorn Lagrangian a term that contains the quartic power of the field. So just the reason is that this model is simpler, so it's simple to develop. It's easier to develop the rules of perturbation theory for this model, and then it will become immediately clear what to do in QED. So here we want to develop expansion in lambda. So let me start with some general remarks. So what is the general idea of perturbation theory? And also, so as in any physical problem, the first thing we can start with is dimensional analysis. So we can estimate by doing dimensional analysis just to see what is the order of magnitudes of that we are dealing with. So in general, we may think of starting with the field theory that is defined by the action that consists of the free part, so the action that describes free particles. Like, for instance, in QED, this would be the Dirac action plus the action for the free electromagnetic field. And then adding to it some interaction term. Now, the basic and very important principle of quantum field theory is that all interactions in quantum field theory are local. Namely, that the interaction Lagrangian should be local function, an integral of a local function of fields. So, so then G will be the coupling constant. And O of X, some local operator. So, for example, in QED, this local operator that we treat as an interaction is I, or let's say it's minus I psi bar gamma mu psi times A mu, and G is equal to E. There is no I here. Another example is phi-4 theory. So there, the interaction operator is phi to the 4, and the coupling constant is lambda. Yes.
Lagrangian root over there with the lambda and phi to the 4, did it come from anywhere? Did you just say this is a Lagrangian we're going to look at?
I just put away it. So we are studying this just because it's simple. Not because it's.
So if there exists a system with a Lagrangian like that, that's what we're concerned with. Because it's nice.
I mean, we will begin with it just because it is simple and technically simple. It doesn't describe any particular interesting physical model. Although, very simple Lagrangian describes the Higgs field in standard model, so it's not absolutely useful. Our motivation is less interesting.
Yes, can you please move the chair?
Which way?
It's all Kadanov's fault.
I wonder what is in this box.
Can you put my podium?
What
you said, my podium.
Okay. So now the philosophy of perturbation theory is that we take any. So suppose that we want to compute any
actually means some physical quantity. That can be, I don't know, the mass of the particle or the probability of, I don't know, annihilation of two particles when they collide with such and such center of mass energy, whatever, some physical quantity that is a function of the coupling constant. We write this as a series in G. So perturbation theory will be a set of rules to compute these coefficients. But then we may wonder how accurate is this series. So because practically it's possible to compute only with the first terms. So how good an approximation that can give us depends on what we are really expanding at. And so here it is very useful to do dimensional analysis. So if G, it really depends, if G has some dimension in units of mass, then of course, we are not expanding. We cannot expand in some dimensional quantity. So, I mean, this truncating this series will be a good approximation if G is small. But then, if G has dimension, then I mean, it can be small numerically. The dimensionful quantity can only be small compared to something of the same dimension. So the real expansion parameter here is G divided by some some parameter of some kinematic quantity, let's call it energy, that characterizes the, let's say, the process that we are studying, raised to the power that is the scaling dimension of G. So if G has dimension nu, it is clear that what we are really expanding in is the ratio of G to the energy to the power nu, where, so this is the mass dimension of of G. So suppose that we study some collision process, then of course the typical energy scale is the center of mass energy of colliding particles. If you're computing the mass corrections to some particle, then this typical energy is just the rest mass of the particle itself, et cetera, et cetera. So depending on the dimension of the coupling, the expansion, the perturbative expansion will be accurate either for small energies or for large energies. So we can distinguish three cases. So case number one is when nu is positive, so G has positive dimension in units of mass. Then this power is positive, so we are expanding in the ratio of G to the to E, and if we, so this basically means that we can achieve good accuracy by raising energy, right? So then the expansion, perturbative expansion, is accurate at large energies. So in particular, this means that if you go to extremely large energies, then the theory becomes basically free. So we can neglect interactions. So large energies means short distances. So in this situation, if the dimension of nu is positive, then we understand the theory at short distances where, so at short distances the interactions are weak, but at large distances they become strong. So perturbation theory breaks down somewhere in between. So such interactions are called relevant interactions. Because they tell us that at zero energies, so if our particles, for instance, collide at very small velocities, the interactions are extremely strong, and so static particles will interact very strongly, and in general, the physics at very at large energies is not under control. It's dominated by interactions. So interactions are important at large distances or at small energies, so they're called relevant for this reason. Now, the second case is when nu is, okay, so let's call the second case. Consider the case where nu is negative. Then this power is negative, so the expansion goes at positive powers of energies. So this means that the expansion is in G e to the some positive power and is accurate at small energies or at large distances. So in practice, this means that if you are considering, so there is certain range of energies for which this product is small, numerically, when we can neglect interactions at all. So they are very small, they produce very small corrections. So if you are studying these low energy processes, you can simply forget about this type of interactions. So for this reason, they are called irrelevant. And finally, there is the third case where the coupling is dimensionless. So then the expansion parameter is dimensionless. And the accuracy depends, well, it depends on two things. Actually, it depends on more things. But anyway, so we may hope that the expansion will give us a good approximation, the perturbative expansion, if the coupling is numerically small, and also that the coefficients are so don't grow very fast. So that smallness of coupling, of course, depends also on the coefficients. So typically, this may be important in range of coefficients is certainly important. So let me give you an example. So for instance, in QED, it is easy to argue that the expansion parameter is not E but E squared, so the expansion goes in the powers of E squared, which is something like 0.1. This is a reasonably small number, right? So we may expect that few first terms of perturbative series give a good approximation to the quantity that we are computing. However, the true parameter of expansion is not E squared, because the coefficients actually are also small. So the expansion parameter is E squared over 16 pi squared. Roughly speaking.
One should understand, one should see how perturbation theory works. So there are certain rules to the perturbation theory, non-sphere rules. And then one can estimate more or less of the state. One can estimate it. Something like 16 pi squared should be it's not clear from Lagrangian. But anyway, so the expansion parameter is something like alpha over 4 pi, which is 6 6 with 3 zeros after the point. So this is extremely small number. So in QED, computing the first correction, so quantities that do not vanish at the leading order already describe physics reasonably well. So there are certain quantities that only appear if you the interaction is switched on. For instance, the hyperfine splittings of the hydrogen atom is an effect of QED interactions. And actually, the relative splitting is basically the same orders of magnitude. So it's very, very small. Yes?
Are you guaranteed that this perturbation C is actually converges?
It's never converges. The series are always divergent. But that's okay. I can live with divergent series. Anyway, so one might think that this case is really exceptional and degenerate, so y should be, the dimension should be exactly zero. By the way, these interactions are called marginal. But nevertheless, these cases of marginal interactions are very often appear in physics. So in particle physics, actually all interesting interactions are marginal. Now, in condensed matter applications of field theory, one encounters all types of interactions, and sometimes they're also marginal. So this is actually an important case. Now, okay, so so now how to determine the dimension of the coupling? Well, usually this interaction operator is a polynomial in fields, yes?
Diverges, right?
Sorry?
The series diverges. So yes. How do you know when I have to stop with expansion? Because if I try to calculate even more and more coefficients, it will get away from the non-linear points of the infinity. So I need a way to see when I have to stop calculating.
Yeah, that's true. So usually, when deals with divergent series, it makes sense to compute such and such number of terms. And the principle, one can estimate how many terms one can compute. There are some wonderful methods to do it. In interesting cases, like in QED, for instance, I think one can compute something like 137 terms.
That has something to do with the coupling constant?
Yes. So one can estimate when perturbation theory breaks down completely because of asymptotic nature of the series, but typically this is very, very high order. So.
And there is no general method for summing these series?
There are methods to sum divergent series. So some divergent series can be summed by parallel estimation, and this is a method. But usually in field theory, the perturbative series are so bad that they are not even summable by parallel. Anyway, there is there was a lot of work on how to understand this divergent series, how to estimate the uncertainty that arises because we cannot the series do not converge. But that's a complicated theorem. I will not be going into
We have a whole course on this just before Christmas, which is a lot more fun than you think, actually. It's brilliant. With Carl Bender, mathematical physics, he'll talk a lot about how to get interesting information out of divergence theories.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay, well, let's get on with the night. Okay.
Yes.
So you shouldn't be afraid of the divergence series. That's the message that you get from studying perturbation theory in quantum mechanics. In quantum mechanics, the series are usually asymptotic. Anyway, so how do we compute this new?
You see that the physics depends quite a lot on the value of nu. Well, we just count. This operator is a polynomial in the fields, and so we just count the dimension of each field and add them. And the dimension of a field is determined by the form of this free Lagrangian. So first of all, the dimension of the action is zero, so action should be dimensionless. How to explain this? Well, the action, so in classical mechanics, the action is pq dot integrated over time, right, minus the Lagrangian. So p times q has the dimension of the Planck constant, right, the uncertainty relation. And the Planck constant is set to 1 in our units. So p times q dot has dimension of the time derivative when we integrate it over time, then we get something dimensionless. So the action has zero dimension. Now the action has the form, okay, so the interaction action has the form of four-dimensional integral, then the constant, and then the operator. So computing the dimensions of both sides, we can say that the dimensions of the coupling, of the measure of integration, and of the operator should add to zero. Now, the measure has dimension minus 4 in the units of energy because so it's a four-dimensional integral, and x has dimension inverse to that of the energy, so this in total has dimension minus 4. So from that, we find that the dimension of the coupling, so what we called nu, is equal to the dimension of operator minus 4. So these three cases correspond to operators of dimension larger than 4. Oh. I think I made this sign mistake. Right? So this is minus the dimension of operator plus 4. So positive dimension of the coupling corresponds to the dimension of operator that is smaller than 4. So this
corresponds to relevant interactions. And operators with these dimensions are called relevant operators. Now the second case corresponds to the dimension of operator larger than 4, so such operators are called irrelevant. And finally, if the operator has dimension that's exactly 4, then we have marginal interactions, and such operators are called marginal. So counting of the dimension of the coupling depends on the counting of the dimension of the corresponding operator, and that can be done by looking at the free Lagrangian. So let's count the dimension of the fields that we have encountered so far. So for instance, what is the, let's compute the dimension of the Klein-Gordon field. We actually have done this from the explicit expression for the quantum field and found that it was 1. But there is a simpler way. So for the Klein-Gordon field, the free Lagrangian is the free action is this one. And now let's look at this term. So we know that the action must be dimensionless. So this has dimension minus 4. So d phi squared should have dimension 4. So this, all this term should have dimension 4. Now derivative has dimension 1. So there are two derivatives. And therefore, the field must have dimension equal to 1. Then for the Dirac field, the Dirac direction is of the Dirac action. So you see that it differs from the Klein-Gordon action. The kinetic term differs from the Klein-Gordon action by the lack of one derivative. So there was only one derivative here, and therefore phi should compensate for that, and we find that the dimension of psi is equal to 3/2. Right? 3/2 plus 3/2 plus 1 adds to 4. So for the electromagnetic field, the counting is also as simple. So from the form of the free action, we deduce that the dimension of the field strength should be equal to 2. And then the field strength is an antisymmetry derivative of the potential. And so the dimension of the potential is equal to 1. So then let's see what is the dimension of interaction term in QED. So the interaction operator is psi bar gamma mu psi a mu. So the dimension of that is 3/2. Dirac matrices are numeric, they are dimensionless. Then another Dirac field, and then electromagnetic field, which has dimension 1. So that adds up to 4.
So this is marginal interaction. So interactions in QD are marginal. We recovered our old observation that the QD coupling constant is dimensionless. It's marginal. Now, lambda 5-4 theory. So here, the interaction consists of four fields inserted at one space-time point. So the dimension of this operator is also equal to 4. So this is also a marginal interaction, meaning that the coupling constant lambda is dimensionless. So this is, again, an example of marginal perturbation. Now, from the form, the perturbation, it's clear that relevant perturbations are far more important if you want to study the physics at low energies. So this most typically is the case. So, so in principle, that if you are interested in the low energy physics, we can only keep marginal, only relevant perturbations, and that will determine, okay, the behavior of the system at low energies. So, from general considerations, if you have some field theory with such and such fields, and in principle all the couplings should be present in the Lagrangian, unless they are forbidden by symmetries. So the possibility to form relevant operators essentially determines what will happen at large distances and at small energies. Now, in the theories that we studied, the Klein-Gordon theory, the electromagnetic field, and the Dirac field, the number of relevant operators is limited, and it's always limited. Because you see that the more fields we put in the operator, the larger dimension will it have, and so the less chances to be marginal, or the less chances it will have to be relevant. So the number of relevant operators is always limited, because the dimension of operator grows with its size. In particular, if you consider only electromagnetic field and the Dirac field, and oppose the condition of gauge invariance, so there will be no relevant operators. QD meaning the theory of interacting Dirac and electromagnetic fields. Now, if we add scalar fields, then the only relevant operator for the Klein-Gordon field is phi cubed, which has dimension 3. So it is less than 4, therefore it is relevant. So there's, if you consider, if you put together the theory that contains Klein-Gordon field and then electromagnetic and Dirac fields, there is only one relevant operator, and this is phi 4. Moreover, if we impose some symmetry on the Klein-Gordon field, for instance, the symmetry of reflection of sine. So if you impose the symmetry of phi going to minus phi, so the Klein-Gordon-Lagrangian is obviously invariant under this symmetry, then phi 4 will break this symmetry. So in this, if we require that our theory is invariant, then marginal interactions will be forbidden, and the lowest possible, sorry, relevant interactions will be forbidden. The lowest possible interaction with the lowest possible dimension will be phi 4 operator, which has marginal coupling. So in principle, in particle physics, relevant operators never arise in some sense. So you see that the only possible operator is phi 4, and typically it's forbidden by symmetry. So that's why the coupling constants in particle physics as we know it are all dimensionless. Or we can add irrelevant operators. Yes?
Like just a term with phi, linear and phi, would that be relevant or is that?
Linear and phi, in principle, it would be relevant, but linear terms can be removed by redefinition of the fields. What did I want to say? So in particle physics, we are only dealing with marginal interactions or with irrelevant interactions. And this means that, in some sense, all interactions should be weak. Because, weak at large distances. Now, in condensed matter applications, one oftentimes deals with relevant perturbations. And then essentially this means that we cannot do perturbation theory, because then the perturbation theory doesn't give us useful information about the low energy behavior, low energy expectations of the system. If you have an irrelevant operator, and of course the number of irrelevant operators is infinite, we can build operators of arbitrarily large dimension. So there is a huge number of irrelevant interactions. But irrelevant interactions typically, so if there is an irrelevant interaction in the Lagrangian, you can for the most time forget this interaction because it will only be important at very high energies. And so at very high energies, there is no reason why we don't add other relevant operators. So the coefficient of other irrelevant interactions. Anyway, so the coefficient in front of an irrelevant operator determines some scale. So if we have an irrelevant interaction, then we can write the interaction Lagrangian. So we can write the coupling as some dimensionless quantity. Divided by an energy scale in some positive power. So the meaning of this energy scale is that it plays the role of the energy cutoff, beyond which we cannot say anything about the theory, because then
we should in principle add all other irrelevant operators, and all of them have equal magnitude of the couplings, and we simply lose the control of the theory. So this is typically the energy cutoff beyond which we lose the control over the theory. So the sort of prototypical example of irrelevant interactions is an old theory of weak interactions. So this is called Fermi theory of weak interactions. Which is described by the four Fermi. So this is the Fermi theory describes interactions between quarks and leptons, which are of the four Fermi type. Okay, so the dimension of this operator, where gamma is some combination of Dirac matrices, which is not important for dimensional counting. So psi has dimension 3/2, so this psi bar psi squared operator has dimension 6. So this has dimension 6. Meaning that the coupling of the Fermi theory, which is called the Fermi coupling, so the coupling of weak interaction has dimension minus 2. Well, it has particular numerical value. So in giga electron volts, it's equal to 1.166 10 to the minus 5 giga electron volts to the minus 2. So from here, just just using numerical analysis, we can draw following conclusions. First of all, that weak interactions are weak, so they are not important at low energies, so their strength is suppressed by at least the square of the energy. So and this is true. The weak interactions is a very very small effect. The processes that for which weak interactions are responsible are very, very slow. And the reason for that is that they're described by an irrelevant interaction. But on the other hand, the same dimensional analysis tells us that there is a typical energy scale where weak interactions become important. So this is just the inverse of G Fermi. So that the typical energy scale of weak interactions is G Fermi to the minus 1, which lies in the range of 100 GeV, minus 1/2. And indeed, at 100 GeV, weak interactions are as strong as electromagnetic interactions. But Fermi theory at this energy breaks down. and should be replaced by something else, and this something else is the Weinberg-Salam model of electro-weak interactions. So in principle, this all follows from, so this affects that weak interactions are at low energies are lead to very small effects, and the fact that there is a typical energy scale at which the Fermi's theory should break down, they just follow from dimensional analysis. Yes? This is the upper bound. So at lower energies, we can use Fermi theory, and it leads to very, very small effects. Beyond this energy, we cannot use Fermi theory anymore, because the expansion parameter is G Fermi times E squared. So as long as energy is smaller than this Fermi scale, then this expansion parameter will be small. However, when it reaches the Fermi scale, there is no reason why we shouldn't add other irrelevant operators of higher dimension. And in fact, this shows that just the theory itself doesn't make sense anymore. So at this scale, Fermi theory breaks down. And is replaced by Weinberg-Salam. So, in which weak interactions is described by marginal operators. So anyway, to conclude, there are three types of interactions, so by dimensional counting, relevant, marginal, and irrelevant. And for relevant operators, it doesn't make sense to do perturbation theory at all, because at low energies, the coupling is strong. For irrelevant perturbations, the interactions are suppressed by energy, by ratio of energy to the scale intrinsic to interactions. So they, to most cases, the irrelevant couplings can be simply forgotten. And finally, there are marginal operators. There is a marginal case where the coupling is dimensionless. And so perturbation theory is most useful in that case where we are expanding in some dimensionless parameter, and our expansion is uniform in energy, so it doesn't depend on whether we are working at low energies or at high energies. We expect that the accuracy will be uniform. Now, the truth is that all this dimensional analysis is modified in quantum field theory. So dimensional quantum field theory changes dimensional counting. But again, if interactions are weak, the corrections can be taken into account systematically in perturbation theory. Okay, so I stop here. Thank you.